Hi, and welcome to this new podcast episode, which is a bit of a branch off from the traditional Training Tidbits podcast. This is a pilot episode, I guess you could call it, and I'm naming it Animal Trainers from Around the World. So over time, I'm going to be inviting trainers onto the show from various countries. These trainers are members of Animal Training Academy and work with training animals in their respective countries. The idea behind the series is to give you, the listener, a window into the world of animal training in various locations. My feeling is that in New Zealand, Australia, Canada, and the US, countries where I've worked anyway, we're all kind of heavily influenced by the big players in the industry, which is generally speaking a good thing. And we're all very exposed to positive reinforcement and high animal welfare. However, there are countries where this exposure might be relatively new or the uptake is consequently not as far as long. So we're going to be talking to practitioners of positive reinforcement in lots of different countries and trying to get a little bit of a window into their world and maybe some of the challenges they've faced as well as the triumphs they have achieved. I also want to use this podcast as a vehicle to show and really help us feel like we're part of a global community of positive reinforcement practitioners and help connect people from different regions, even if that connection simply means listening to this podcast, and help connect people from different countries. Also, I want to use these podcasts to get people thinking about things they haven't thought about before and to reflect on the differences that exist for us and our animals around the world. And for this episode, we have a member of the Academy who reached out to me recently expressing an interest in my content and how my content could assist him in his mission in Poland to help spread the word about the most positive and less intrusive methods of animal training knowledge. So I'm going to say this morning, well, I'm happy to introduce, well, as me and Miko actually just talked about, I can't say this morning because I do realize in saying that in Poland, it's actually 12 hours behind us. So although it's 10 a.m. in the morning here, it's 10 p.m. in Poland at the moment. So maybe I should say today, I'm very happy to introduce Miko from Poland. Good morning, Miko.
Good morning. Good morning, Ryan. Good morning, everybody.
How's everything in Poland today?
Well, it's actually quite good, and the morning was surprising because we have snow in the night, so it was a little bit surprising because the spring is coming. It was not expected, but it's okay.
Yeah, so Miko, you're moving into spring now, because I was thinking that as you just mentioned that snow, I was like, hang on, it's meant to be spring over there at the moment, and you're going to go into summer. What's your summers like in Poland? I have no idea. I'm a bit ignorant about Poland and about the climates there. Do your summers get pretty warm? Or?
Yeah, they might get really warm. In terms of centigrade, we can get up to 35, 36, even 40 sometimes.
You're kind of like Canada, I guess, in so much as you've got some pretty big extremes. You've got an intense heat in the summer and snow in the winter.
Yeah, exactly that.
Yeah, hey, fantastic. Hey, now, Miko, you're working at a zoo / aquarium in Poland as a marine mammal trainer?
Exactly, yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you get up to?
Yeah, sure. I am a marine biologist at the University of Gdansk, which is at the coast of Poland on the Baltic Sea. And I started my career in marine mammals at the marine station of that university, which was at the city of Hell, with one L, not level L, where I got involved into working with gray seals, both husbandry, captive, and wild ones. Then I moved to more rehab center, like in Netherlands. And then I came back to training the animals. I got involved with a private facility also at the coast. And recently, like 3 months ago, I moved to the south of Poland to a city called Wrocław, where they have a really new, nice facility called Africarium, where they have fishes from Africa. And they invited me to work with them with South African fur seals and African penguins. So it's the first time for me with penguins because I spent almost a decade working with pinnipeds. So that's a new, exciting.
Yeah, cool. And what's your role there?
I'm a part of a 4-people team working with fur seals and penguins. So basic idea is be a keeper for them. So cleaning up after them, cleaning up the facility, talking to people, and of course training them for husbandry most of all, and for educational purposes. So all of these things, and we try to incorporate some research training, but for now it's just a plan because we will take care of the husbandry stuff first.
Yeah, cool. And are you doing, when you say educational stuff, are you just doing kind of impromptu educational stuff at the moment, or do you have formal talks and shows and whatnot set up?
Most of the time we have a offer regular shows, like for people with comment twice a day. And sometimes our the educational department of the zoo organize some events in which we, of course, take part. It depends what they've come up with.
Yeah, fantastic. Hey, well, we're going to talk a little bit about what you're up to and the training you're doing a little bit later in the podcast. And everything you've said so far sounds great. And it's so good to have you on the show. I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while now.
Yeah, I'm really excited, Ray. Thank you.
Thank you, Miko. Thank you. I'm just going to dive off topic a little bit. Just talk a little bit about the other podcast episodes. If you haven't listened to them already, if you are listening to this one, you'll probably either found us on iTunes or the Animal Training Academy website. If you wanted to listen to the other ones and you're not already on the website, then head over there and download the rest of the podcast episodes, which are completely free. And also, if you do head over to Animal Training Academy while you're there, check out the other stuff that's going on in that space. There's the free training tidbits course as well. So all you have to do to get full access to that course is hit the register button on the site, put in your details, and off you go. And the course is really going to help improve your life by providing you with tools and resources that are going to help guide you in getting more desirable behaviors from your animals. So whether you're after loose leash walking with your dog, you just want to train your animals at home, or your seals in the zoo, or your penguins in the zoo, or your lions in the zoo, whatever, or the course is designed to help you get the behaviors you want. And getting any behaviors really starts with first having the right information and then knowing how to apply it. So the information in the free training tidbits course provides the info you need and also has live demonstrations with animals showcasing how that information is put into practice so you guys can replicate it in your situations. And the information is relevant for everyone, all types of animals. It's an ongoing project. There's always going to be fresh, new, free material up on that site pretty much every single week. So go check it out. Start learning today, literally right now. Go check it out. Hey, back to Miko though. You know, I remember very clearly when I first started learning about positive reinforcement and consequently implementing it with the animals in my care, and equally remember the first animal I ever trained, Bob the wedge-tailed eagle. Miko, maybe you can tell us a little bit of information about where you first started learning about positive reinforcement and talk us through where and with what animal you first started implementing it and how you knew that this is the kind of teaching that you needed to be doing.
Yeah, I've seen you with your eagle, so I actually envy you that. I started hearing about positive reinforcement actually on my first job at Hell Marine Station, where they have 6 captive gray seals for scientific reasons mainly and educational. So I was introduced into positive reinforcement. So my teacher at the time was a guy who actually started the positive reinforcement training with marine mammals in Poland in general. So he adopted it from Denmark. What he taught me was a little bit different from what other parts of the world usually does, because he interpreted the things that he learned differently and he put it into the context that he had to work with. So he had 6 gray seals and he had to work them alone at the time. So I was his partner. And what he taught me was to control 6 seals at the same time. So it was 1 trainer, 6 animals. The training sessions could last up to 45 minutes. So it was really long. But for me at the time, it was the only thing I knew. So for me, it was natural. Yeah. So I took it. It was really funny for me. On one side, I was able to connect with the animals like never before. So it was really fantastic. But on the other side, I saw in animals that it was not really funny for them because they had to wait for their turn to get fish or for their turn to have a behavior. So it was quite static thing. Then I had a really good opportunity to go abroad to Denmark to the facility where my teacher was taught. Yep. And then I realized that, okay, he taught me well. He taught me the basics. He taught me the book, as you can say, the literature. But then he interpreted it in the way that I would not. When I came back, I started to talk to him. I started a little bit force on him to change a little bit the training, to have 2 people at the same time, to divide the group of seals. Then we have a girl who also came to our team about 3 or 4 months after me, and she was exactly the same as me on this topic. So,
and yeah, but we all talked and we all agreed at the end point. So we started to do some really nice things. And the best part of that is that when we started to divide the seals into 3 groups between each of us, we started to seeing that the animals kind of light up. So yeah, this was like a revelation for us and a revelation for them that, hey, you can do it differently. So this was really, really nice. And since then, I really enjoy every opportunity to contact people from abroad to talk about the ideas, to talk about the positive reinforcement, because what I believe sometimes is fixed, can say, and then I talk to someone else and I have a whole new bunch of ideas. So for me, it's really important and exciting to have an opportunity to talk to anyone else. And whenever you as a trainer, no matter if you're experienced or just starting, if you have a chance to talk to another trainer, just do it, because at the very least you will get new ideas. So it's also very good for me.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful thing to say, Miko. And it's one of the reasons why I started Animal Training Academy, to be honest with you. Me and you have talked about we're walking the same path here. We're keen to open up these channels of communication and allow people experiences and opportunities to be inspired and to get new ideas and to hear how other people are doing things. And I find what you just said quite interesting in so much as I think it's an experience that a lot of people might find themselves in, that they're at a new place and they are put in situations where they have to manage animal behavior, and they can see one or two things is maybe or could be improved, I guess is a good way of putting it. And without the skills and knowledge of how you would go about implementing that, you can go on the internet now or you could read books, or like you've correctly identified, it's highly beneficial to go and talk to other people and get that input. And I think a lot of people are in similar situations, and I'm curious as to how it went down in your organization at the time with regards to suggesting changes to someone who had been doing things a certain way, because I think a lot of people might be in situations like that as well, where they want to improve things, but moving forward, they don't quite know how to address it. And it sounds like you guys had a lot of success there.
Yeah, we had, but it was not without lots of discussions and even with a bit of work sometimes. So one thing I took it from that time was that I had an idea to improve, and I have a friend who had pretty much the same idea. And then we had a guy who taught us, actually, and we were trying to convince him. So we have to be like every other trainer. We had to be really, really patient, and we have to take really small steps, because we realized that if we hit him with all the things that we want to change at once, he will just simply say no and forget about it. And he had the power, because he was superior to us even formally, so he could say no, we're not doing that. So we have to feed him a little bit at the time, and then we get to the point that he started to realize that we had to do changes. And actually we were really happy that something is changing, and then that he's actually taking the idea. So, but the transition, the change is always hard. So, you have to be prepared for that.
Like you would in training, you have to be patient and you have to take things in little baby steps. So I think, some great advice there. And I feel I shared a similar situation with Bob the Wedge-Tailed Eagle. I wasn't getting results. I left. I got some advice. I came back and I had to slowly suggest things. And like yourself, we got results in the end. And I remember my aha moment where I saw, and you put it, I think the words you used were the animals looked, I can't remember now, you kind of described it as they looked happier or they look like they're enjoying themselves more. I remember having that exact moment. The first time I got Bob the Eagle to voluntarily let me go in, play with his feet on the perch, put his jesses in, have him voluntarily step up onto my glove and then walk him out of the exhibit, weigh him, bring him back. The first time I did that, just the understanding of what I had just done and why this was the most positive and unintrusive way of teaching animals just has stuck with me, that feeling. And I think you kind of possibly shared a similar feeling when you started to split those seals up. Yeah, and you saw you saw changes in their behavior.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, yeah. It was like I said, it was like a moment, because on one training session we did it old ways and the other we agreed that we tried the new way. And it was like the seals were at the same time excited and frightened, but after a few seconds the excitement took over and all the fear was gone, and you could actually feel they were anticipating what will be next. Wait, this is cool, this is something new, let's do it, what's next? And before that it was just, okay, this is feeding, okay, now it's my turn. No, now it's not my turn. And with this change it was really like lighten up. I cannot say it other words than lighten up.
Yeah, I think that's well put, Miko. So Miko, part of this podcast is really being able to share with the Academy's members what it's like in Poland as a positive reinforcement animal trainer. You know, is everyone in Poland using positive reinforcement? Is it new? Is no one using it? I have no idea. Can you maybe give us a little bit of history about positive reinforcement's use in Poland and any challenges you might have faced implementing it? Like you've just mentioned some there. Have you faced any other problems, or has it all been pretty much smooth sailing? Give us a little bit of information about what the situation in Poland's like in terms of the most frequently used animal training techniques.
Yeah, sure. I'll try at least. As far as I know, the guy that started this, the one that taught me, he started implementing the positive reinforcement with marine mammals in the early 21st century. So it was like 2002, I believe, that he started doing it. I'm not sure whether any zoo did it before, like really did it before, knowing that this is positive reinforcement with all the plants and so on. So when we did it in Helmarine Station, we fought it for the first time. So this was really good. Then other zoos started to contact us and ask us to show them how to do it.
Yeah.
So it was really nice. So we started to go to Warsaw Zoo. I went to two zoos in Poland, including the one in Gdańsk where I did my master. And the challenges in those zoos were that the number of people working there compared to the number of species they keep, it's really not enough to do a proper training, like real plan. So we have to manage that. For example, in Gdańsk Zoo, there were only four people working in that department at one day. So they have like six people, but in shift. So they were four people working with seals, cats, dogs, bears. So they had like, I believe, about 30 animals. They wanted to introduce the positive reinforcement training generally for the husbandry reasons, to be able to touch the animals, to look at them. So the way we have to do it was that there will be only one session a day, 6 days a week. So it's really not ideal, but this was the only way we could work it. So this is the first, I would say, obstacles in all of the zoos in Poland, as far as I know. A limited amount of people working with lots of animals, so they kinda, it's really hard to organize. The other thing is that at least at this point, there's a mix of old people and young people working in the zoos in Poland, and the I don't want to be rude, but the old people usually don't really want to train animals with positive reinforcement, because they kind of stuck with what they are already doing, and they think it's okay, and it's unnecessary to give themselves another job like training, because they have to develop plans, training plans, they have to find time to do this, and so on and so on. So working with them, it's really hard, because you have to convince them, you have to show them what they can do, and sometimes they get lightened up, like with the animals, they suddenly discover, oh my God, I was doing this for 20 years and it's so easy that I can do whatever I want. So some of them just, like I would say, maybe even convert. Some of them just listen to you and agrees and doesn't really do anything. Some of them would say just, oh, I don't want to do it, it's a waste of time. But with the young people, that's very interesting thing, because most of the young people are really excited about this idea. The problem is that they are not taught this at school. So if you are studying zookeeping in Poland, you usually don't hear about much about positive reinforcement. Maybe you have a class or two, you do not have an opportunity to practice this. So whenever they hear from me that you can do it like this, this is the book, this is the basics, you have to learn them and then you have to apply them and you can do it like this and you can have these results, usually they were very excited about it and they would adopt it immediately. So those are, I think, the basics. The whole positive reinforcement training in Poland is actually, I would say, emerging at this moment. Yeah, it's about 15 years since it's really entered Poland, the whole concept, the whole idea. So we are still at the beginning of the road. It's going in the right direction. I think it's going really, really fast. So
yeah, that's good to hear. And I think the challenges of not having enough time in a zoo and lots of animals and not enough staff is something you might hear from a lot of zoos in a lot of different countries, obviously.
Yeah, I imagine that.
Yeah, obviously, yeah. Time is one of our most precious resources and additionally one of our most limited, and probably every vocation, not just zookeeping. And also the difference in generations with regards to the information they received when they were first starting in zookeeping. I think that's quite a universal thing that you'll find across different countries as well. So you've been practicing this for quite a long time now yourself, and you've already shared some great stories with us. I was wondering if you had any other stories from your experience as an animal trainer that, and maybe highlight any significant lessons you've learned along the way that have really stuck out to you.
Oh, I would be honored to do this. Actually, I would say two stories, but the second one complies of few behaviors. But the first one, a seal in Helmarine Station, the place I started working with marine mammals, there was a female seal called Agata. Mm-hmm. And when I started, she was really like shy. She wouldn't come to you. She was always afraid. She was always agile. Any noise would cause a heart attack with her. And after the changes that we made, we started to focus more on her, because one thing we knew is that she caught up a new behavior really, really fast. So we knew that she's really intelligent in that way. So we start to look closely on her, how can we focus on her and make her more calm and more comfortable with the training. And what we discovered is that she is really like a highly energetic animal. So she, whenever we ask her to stay still for a period of time, whenever it was 5 seconds or 15 seconds, it didn't matter. After 2 seconds, she was all over the place. We started a plan that requires us to use secondary reinforcement, like whenever she did something good, like she stayed still for 3 seconds, we gave her opportunity to jump, to swim, to do whatever she wanted. And within 2 or 3 weeks, the animal has completely changed. Not only she was calmer, but she trusted us so much that within half a year, when we started this, we couldn't even touch her on her hind flippers, and within half a year we could take a blood sample from her. So the trust of the animal when we started using secondary reinforcement on her was really like amazing. And this is actually the core idea I wanna say about that, the value of trust. Because this voluntary blood sampling, we trained 6 animals to do that, and the vet that we have was stationed in Germany, because there were no vets in Poland who specialized in marine mammal biology at that time. So we cooperated with a vet in Germany, and the guy is like 2 meters tall. He's like 130 kilos, so huge guy. And imagine a seal, a gray seal, lying on a floor, and this huge guy standing over her with a 20 centimeter needle putting in her back, because we train blood sampling from the spine, not from the flipper, because he said it's easier for him. Yeah, when he did it, I could say, because he took the blood like in 5 seconds. So imagine a seal who rarely trust anyone, let totally stranger, because when he came, they didn't really know him, not a smell, not a sight of him. He only showed us on video how to do it. And all of the seals, all 6 seals, for the very first time when they saw the guy, allowed him to stand over them and put the needle inside them and take the blood without even moving. So for us, it was like, it's not happening. It couldn't be that good. So the trust of the animals for us at this moment was beyond any question. We knew that we have total trust of the animals, and that we cannot spoil it, because it was really good. The other thing that the Helmarine Station did was, is doing still, is releasing pups that are born at the facility for scientific reason, mainly to tag them with satellites, navigate, satellites tracking, so we can track their movement. And the females trust us so much that they allow us into the nursery area to feed them while they are nursing the pups. So we could sit next to a female who is feeding her pup and give her food. So for us, it was really also another example of trust. And the last thing about trust I want to say is I had a situation when I was in a pool, which is like 3.5 meters deep. So I had no ground under my feet. And there were 6 seals, including 2 adult males with me, swimming around me. So it was my head on the surface of the water and around me 6 big heads of gray seals. And I could do a training session like this, like a whole 20, 15 minutes training session with fish stuck in some sockets at my belt. And for me, it was one frightening because, yeah, you see those mouths with those teeth and you know that they can kill you without in a second if they want. But then on the other side, I felt completely safe because I knew that I can trust them. So for me, all those things highlight the one really significant lesson. It's that when you find a way to build a trust with your animals and you do build the trust, the bond, this is the core of the training, for me at least. Because once you have the trust, you can do with animals almost everything that they are capable of, and you have something that cannot be built otherwise. So the value of trust, this is my lesson.
Great. That was a fantastic story, Miko. What a beautiful illustration of trust and the result of positive reinforcement and implementing the strategies to a high standard, like you seemingly did with the vet there. What a remarkable trust account those seals, based on the positive reinforcement work that you've done with them. Seemingly, if you can bring a 2-meter tall, 130-kilogram vet in with a big needle, that's very impressive.
Yeah, imagine, we were really impressed with them, with all the 6 of the seals. It was really fun. We couldn't say thank enough for them. It was really amazing.
Oh yeah, and that story is so important, and to share that and to get that out there for other people to learn from and to be inspired from is really important. Because if you're new to positive reinforcement and you like the sound of it, but you don't have that many references yourself, I always like to share amazing stories like that to demonstrate, you know, what people have to look forward to. And so thank you for sharing that. That's really cool.
Welcome. I hope the people will like it and will take inspiration from it.
Yeah, I think 100% I did, and everyone else will as well. Fantastic. Hey, that kind of answered the next question I had for you, which was, being on this podcast, and I know you've got plans to move forward with content creation and using the internet and these options that we have available to us in 2016 to kind of spread the knowledge in the Polish language, which is really cool. Is there anything else, just before we move on to the next question, because I was going to ask you, you know, what's the most important aspects of successful management of animal behavior? And you kind of just answered that. I think a lot of people will highlight trust as number one. Is there anything else you want to add on that before we move on about some other specific important aspects of managing behavior?
I think that properly manage the behavior of your animal, you have to, of course, know them. I mean, know them in terms of their biology. Like a species, you have to know what they are capable of, but also you have to know their individual side. So you have to know that this animal, like, for example, like Agata, she really like to have a secondary reinforcement as jumping and so on, but the other animal may prefer to stay still or something like that. So you have to know the animal. So and then you have to be able to take clues from what they are giving you, like hints in their behavior or something like that. So apart from trust, I would say knowing your animal in all the ways possible.
Yeah, so 2 great points there. One, you know, with behavior management, I guess positive reinforcement and behavioral science are kind of, I like to view it as a jigsaw puzzle. They're kind of one piece of the jigsaw puzzle that make up behavior. There's health influences that come in there and veterinary input into behavioral management. And then, like you just correctly identified as well, there's ethology and the species you're working with and what's natural for that species or what that species has naturally evolved to do in the wild. Of course, that's another piece of the jigsaw puzzle that you have to consider every time you go into a new training situation with a new species. And the other thing you highlighted there as well is something that I like to talk about a lot, and I think is one of the most important aspects of behavior management as well, is recognizing that every animal is an individual, and what's reinforcing for one animal over here might not be for another animal that's from the same species in a very similar environment. What might be reinforcing for one animal might be punishing for another. So 100% agree with you there, Miko, getting to know your animals both at a species level and also at an individual level, and making sure that you're, via watching behavior, you're understanding and starting to gauge what is reinforcing for that animal as an individual and what's punishing for that animal as an individual.
Yeah, exactly that. Couldn't say it other words.
Fantastic. Hey, we're nearly at the end, Miko. And thank you so much for sharing all your great stories and experiences with us over the last 30 to 40 minutes. One last question just before we wrap up. I'm curious to know, and you might have already alluded to this earlier in the podcast with regards to the learning of being a zookeeper in Poland and where that could possibly become better in the future. But over the next 10 years or so, what would you like to see happen in Poland with regards to animal trading?
I think there are two aspects. First is to implement some kind of practice in positive reinforcement within the universities where you can train to be a zookeeper or a vet or whatever, because also for the vets, I saw many examples where vets use positive reinforcement in their practices, and within a few minutes they could calm the animals down. But this is one aspect, the education and the ability to practice for the students, not only knowing the basics, the theory, but also have a chance to actually train animals, even if it's only mouse, for example. Yeah. But I would really love to see some kind of change in the management of zoo, like the managers and the management staff would really see the capabilities of positive reinforcement training, because sometimes it happens that when you convince the zookeeper that has contact with the animal about the positive reinforcement training, and he or she is really excited about it, then they meet a wall of the management who says, okay, but there's a time restriction, okay, but this animal cannot be trained or whatever, or this attitude. And I would really like to see the change in the management, so they could really see, and even they would in a way order the keepers to learn and to implement reinforcement, because as far as I can see, there are no drawbacks of implementing positive reinforcement in the zoo, even in the most basic form. It doesn't have to be like an educational show. It can be just behind the scenes husbandry, like very basic husbandry, but it's always good. The good thing in zoos in Poland is that more and more environmental enriching is going on, but I would also like to push a little bit more into positive reinforcement. So this is my, would you say, a big hope.
Honestly.
Yeah,
cool. And I think that positive reinforcement, and you touched on it with increasing education opportunities in universities and for training for people who want to be zookeepers. And that training, I guess, has to stretch past the zookeeper into management and, you know, into vets as well. So everyone understands what's going on, because sometimes, I think, as you correctly identified as well, the keepers get educated and then they have to kind of take it on themselves to implement that in an environment where there might be opposing views or opposing priorities, which is a challenge that I think a lot of people can relate to. And you gave some pretty good advice earlier in the podcast about ways that you've dealt with that in the past that I think people can really take away from this podcast. So yeah, I think some great ideas there moving forward in Poland, and I think those ideas once again are universal. I think that will happen in most countries moving forward with positive reinforcement, no matter what stage the development of positive reinforcement being implemented in the country is, where it happens in 5 years, 10 years or 15 years. And as you saw with your seal, the first seals you train in that group of six individuals, the results speak for themselves. And I think that's what is eventually and slowly winning out, is the people that, like yourself, who have adopted positive reinforcement, successfully managed to take it back to their organization, implement it and get results. And you're not only changing the animal's life, you're changing people's perceptions, and it's the results. It's the trust accounts that are formed. It's the little dispositional changes you can see in your animal's behavior that we interpret as happy. happiness and as excitement, and it's the overall increase in welfare. So I think that that's going to win out at the end of the day. What do you think?
Yeah, I really hope so, because you cannot underestimate the values of implementing positive reinforcement in a zoo. In my point of view, it's only good stuff. The animal gets more attention, the animal gets better welfare. You have, as a zookeeper or a manager, you have a higher standard of work. You have more satisfaction from the job, because you see the animals are more satisfied. So and the people who visited zoo, I also very often hear that when they see a trainer really connected to the animal or a keeper connected to the animal, they also react differently, and they can come to you and say, oh, I can see that you really like the animal, that you really love the animal really loves you, and this makes me feel good and makes me want to know more about the animal. So I think from my perspective, positive reinforcement, if well implemented, has only beneficial sides.
Yeah, and three things there. Positive reinforcement, if there is a possibility that it's not being implemented due to time, it's the initial investment of time at the start, but once the animal learns the process of behavior reinforcement, and like your seals at the start, they get excited and they're seeking out those opportunities to interact, and as we slowly teach them new behaviors that are more desirable for them and more desirable for us, with regards to husbandry practices and voluntary blood draws, over time you actually end up saving a lot of time in the long run. And that's something that takes time, and obviously when people start seeing that, they become more likely to implement that in the future. Obviously for managers in zoos, if we can implement positive reinforcement, that leads towards greater visitor engagement and visitor experience in our talks, in our presentations, in our shows. I think that that's another way to demonstrate to everyone involved and everyone invested in your time as a keeper and in your time working for that zoological institution. It's a great benefit. It's a win-win for visitors, for keepers, for animals, and for managers. And the other thing, it's great, as you mentioned, that visitors come and interact with you in a way and become more interested in the species. But for me, it's always been really important as well that whether you're training, you know, a dog or a seal, some zoos have dogs involved in their shows and stuff like this, or you're training an elephant or a giraffe, when people come who may not have exposure to positive reinforcement and they see you do things with, you know, say a giraffe in a way that kind of is outside the boundaries of what they might view as possible, then if they do have cats and dogs at home, you know, they've just gained a new reference point, and they do take, I believe, what they see us do as keepers in zoos, they do take that information home with them, and it's always my hope and my belief that, you know, they're going to take it home with them and they're going to research it more and they're going to hopefully think differently about next time they have a behavioral issue with their pet dog or their pet cat. I remember I was at a zoo recently, I'm doing some consultancy, and we were training some porcupines, and one of the visitors came up and we engaged in conversation. We were talking about how we're working towards harness training, and we had the two porcupines just at the beginning of their station training, and you know, at the end of it, the lady came up to me and was telling me about her sheep. She had a sheep at home, and she was going to go home and she was going to try to do these things with her sheep, and that to me is one of the hugest benefits of visitors coming and seeing us, and whether it be in a show or a talk or we're just doing husbandry practice, if we can show that to our visitors, I think that's a huge pro.
Yeah, definitely, yes. Put in a little more. So when I first found out about your site, the Animal Training Academy, I was really excited, because as I said at the beginning, I always like to contact other trainers. So I immediately went to the site, and there was this free online course, the podcast. So it's really good resource for anyone who wants to start training or who wants to know about positive reinforcement. But also for me, because as a trainer who has 10 years, almost 10 years experience, I always like to come back to the basics. So for me, it's really good site. You can start your training or you can remind yourself what the basics are. So it's for everyone.
Yeah, thanks for that, Mika. And I do want to additionally know, you know, what you guys want to learn about as well. And if the contents, you're finding the content relevant to your situation, or you want more in-depth content, or you even want more simple content, or the content is working for you. And I have tried to design it so that, yeah, it'll work for more experienced trainers and it will work for less experienced trainers and trainers managers starting out. And I know, Miko, that you kindly purchased the Clicker training course recently, and we have the VIP program set up. So I'm really looking forward to working with you and equally learning from you and your experience as much as I look forward to hopefully be able to be sharing with you in the future. So I'm pretty excited about maybe connecting with some of the animals and talking about penguins. I love penguins.
Yeah, for sure I would use, because for me penguins are total new, so I have really no clue how to start with them except for the basics that I know. But
you have a fully qualified over the top bird nerd on the other side of the computer here. Don't get me started talking about birds. I'll eat your ear off on that one. Hey, that pretty much brings us to the end of the podcast. Miko, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you today, and thank you for taking the time and staying up. Like we mentioned at the start of the podcast, what is it? It's 11 a.m. in the morning here now in New Zealand, but it's getting close to midnight in Poland, and having to drop my partner off at university, this is the earliest I could do it this morning. So a massive thank you for sitting up, Miko.
Excited. I'm really enjoying this, Ryan. I'm really enjoying this, guys, and I hope you like it and inspiration from it.
Yeah, and you had such great stories about and such great advice, and we'll just recap some of the things you said. So I think great advice was leave your institution. Sometimes people get a bit of cabin fever if they haven't been out for a while. If you see an opportunity to go to a conference or to go to a space where there's going to be other animal trainers, or in 2016, you know, jump on animaltrainingacademy.com. Go online. There's lots of opportunities to interact and try to meet other trainers. Of course, listen to these podcasts and take any opportunities you can. And like you said at the start of the podcast, that heavily influenced you going away and meeting other trainers as well. And if you're in a situation in a zoo or if you're in a household situation and you're trying to train animals and other people might not be on the same page as you yet, just be patient with that and take your time and small baby steps and work towards the most positive and less intrusive methods of animal training, and positive reinforcement is one of many important aspects of that. And as you correctly identified, Miko, the results are things like higher welfare for our animals with these behaviors that we interpret as them being happy. You know, whether that's a seal with, what was her name, Agatha?
Yeah, Agatha.
Agatha, you know, showing behaviors that we interpreted as shy and possibly moving away from us to an animal that's moving towards us and seeking out those interactions, with to having seals lie down and let a stranger, a big stranger at that, come in and voluntarily take bloods. The trust accounts incredibly important and a huge benefit that once you start implementing positive reinforcement and you start putting deposits in your trust account and your trust account starts to grow, the implications of that and the positive results of that are humongous. And your story beautifully illustrated that. And the other thing you identified was each animal is an individual. And that's a recurring theme you will see in a lot of my content as well. And I'm completely on the same page there. And also to take in the ethology and the species that you're working with, which is important. If you're in a zoological situation, and you talked about this earlier, Miko, you might be in a situation where you're managing a large number of individual animals and across a diverse range of species. So you have to take that into consideration and spend your time learning about as much information as you can about each species that you're going to be working with. Do you have anything else to add on to the end of that, Miko? I kind of try to sum up everything you've just said. Is there anything I've missed?
I think you've covered the most important thing. So yeah, I think it's okay.
Fantastic. Hey, everyone listening out there, as always, I want to hear from you. So please leave a comment on the page of this podcast. I'm really keen to know, you know, if you guys like this idea of having Miko on here and having these conversations with animal trainers from around the world. Hey, if you're sitting in some country and you want to talk about animal training in your country, leave a comment and then we'll touch base and we'll see what we can do. I'm also interested if you didn't like the podcast. If you didn't like the podcast, let me know. I want to know that. We want to know if you have any questions or if you just want to leave a comment, then please type it in below. Even if you just want to say hi, if you just want to type hi and that's it, I'd still love to hear from you. So leave a comment. It's always been a pleasure to record one of these podcasts. Thank you very much, Miko. Really enjoyed it this morning.
Evening. Thank you, Ryan.
Good luck with all your training endeavors, everyone, and we'll see you again soon. Ciao.